This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're joined now on the phone by Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley. Mayor, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
And for those of you listening, if you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 513-419-7100. You can also email your questions or comments to talk at WVXU.org or look us up on social media. We'll be tracking comments and questions there as well. Mayor, I understand you just got off the phone with Governor Mike DeWine and the other mayors representing the seven largest cities in the state. Can you tell us a little bit about what was discussed?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, the governor has been very open in communication with us. We, generally speaking, have a call every day with him and Lieutenant Governor. And about half the time, Dr. Amy Acton is with us on the call. And we talk about all the issues that we're all dealing with, many of which are similar. You know, whether it's being able to get police officers on the streets from the academy to getting firefighters tested faster so they don't have to quarantine as long, to getting liquor license objections for bars and locations, the application timeline delayed, things of various sorts. They helped us get the loan that we secured for $50 million. And so it's been extremely helpful. Having that direct communication, and we've been very appreciative.
Is there anything that Cincinnati is learning from its peer cities in Ohio as we navigate this pandemic?
You know, I mean, honestly, there's a lot of similarity. You know, most cities in Ohio and across the country are increasingly doing what Dayton and Akron and Cincinnati have already done, although it's very emotionally draining and difficult sacrifice financially for individuals. But the furlough process is pretty much becoming universal among the cities that we talk to. I know not only is Columbus and Toledo likely to follow suit, but Louisville, Kentucky is looking at it. And so we trade, you know, stories in how we're trying to manage this incredible budget shortfall that's hitting us at the same time that our police and firefighters are called to do more stuff and more dangerous stuff that can also lead to having a number of first responders sort of quarantined and put out of business for a while.
Well, let's talk about that $50 million loan. We know that the city is facing a tremendous budget shortfall as the economy virtually shuts down. Furloughs have been announced at City Hall. What are the priorities of this $50 million?
Well, we don't know yet in the sense that we're not using it yet.
You better find
Hello?
Sorry, I think that's coming
Hello?
From one of the offices. Okay, I think that's off now. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Our apologies for that. Please continue, Mayor. We were talking about the priorities for that loan.
So the priorities are to, first and foremost, to make sure that we provide the basic services that are necessary for a civilized society, which include but are not limited to police and fire and sanitation, garbage collection, sewer, clean water, public health right now is obviously a major issue. So those functions, you know, must continue. And since we don't know just how bad the economic fall off is going to be, you know, there's a scenario where we need that money just to maintain those services. It's also the case that, you know, with 1,700 furloughs, that there are a lot of services that are going to be dramatically reduced at the moment because they need to be for public health reasons to keep people at home. And so we have dramatically shut down, for example, economic development activities, planning commission activities, although we're doing some but not many, park and rec. We just had to announce yesterday that we're going to delay yard waste pickup, you know, because of furloughs, and You know, those are things that are important to the quality of life of the city and people have come to depend upon, and is one of the reasons why Cincinnati is an attractive city and is growing. And so, you know, for me, you know, bringing those services back online, if there's a clear path to a structurally balanced budget in a year or two, is the kinds of things that I would use and recommend to city council that we use the money for. But candidly, we're not going to know exactly, you know, how much or when, probably for a couple of months.
Can you tell us how to characterize this money? Is it a loan? Is it a line of credit? Just give us some understanding of what the funding is.
Yeah, it's a loan. I mean, it functions like a line of credit. You know, it's functionally the same thing. You know, we have the ability, essentially, we have access to $50 million for 1 year, and we're going to pay essentially, you know, just under about $1 million for it. But if we don't need it, you know, we pay it back minus the $1 million a year later. If we do need it, then we have to figure out a way to pay it off over 10 years under the current setup, which obviously would be a huge imposition for the next 10 years. But also, you know, it's not fair to have the city's services decimated, you know, just because, you know, we have this extremely unique situation where revenues fall off on a one-time basis, you know, by 30, 40, 50%, and then all of a sudden it will take us years to recover, and it would be cheaper to essentially share that burden over a 10-year period. But, you know, I'm fiscally conservative by nature, and I'm not going to ask the next 10 years to pay for that unless, you know, it really is about delivering the parks and rec and yard waste services, you know, et cetera, that people really expect and I think should get for their tax dollar. And, you know, we don't want to go a year, 2 years without being able to have any of those things. And so, you know, I expect that we will use some of it, but I'm also confident that before we use it, that we will have made very difficult cuts across the board before we tap those funds.
And we're talking live with Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley. Mayor Cranley, let me just ask you, how is the city doing right now? We've seen some difficult announcements that you've had to make, but how are the city leaders holding up right now, including you?
Well, I mean, like everybody, I have a mix of emotions daily. But overall, I'm very proud of, before I get into the city proper, the city as a whole is very much in compliance with the orders to stay at home. And, you know, businesses are shut down. You know, as I like to point out in my press conferences, I'm both proud of our compliance overall, but I'm saddened by it too, because I know it represents just massive economic disruption, the likes of which we've literally never seen. And so, you know, it's scary for people, and I think the economic impact is going to last for several years, unfortunately. And so, you know, I'm proud, but I recognize that this is going to be a painful time for a lot of us for a long time. You know, as it relates to us directly, I think that the city manager and the police chief and the fire chief are doing, among others, an extraordinary job under incredibly stressful circumstances to maintain, you know, police, fire, sanitation, water, sewer, 911 call centers, you know, public health, all these things that are absolutely necessary and critical. And, you know, and at the same time, having to make extremely difficult emotional decisions about furloughs and others that is never fun and is not personal, but it feels personal. And so managing all that at the same time takes a lot of fortitude. And so I couldn't be prouder of the city leadership on these issues.
And coming up, we will talk a little bit more about compliance. We did see a high-profile violation of the stay-at-home order that got a lot of attention across the country and maybe changing the way that the buses operate here, and we'll get into that. But first, we've seen some upgraded recommendations as it relates to masks and wearing them in public. What are your thoughts on that, and what are you doing as it relates to masks personally?
Yeah, you know, this is one of those things that, at least in the short term, is going to be one of those, this is different kind of life issues. And the reality is that we have to start wearing masks. You know, in the short term, that means homemade, you know, bandanas, cloth masks, which are obviously not as effective as the, you know, surgical or N95 masks. But ultimately, even a bandana will reduce the spread and the receipt of you know, these little water particles that come out of people's mouths and nose. And so it's I talked about this yesterday. Over the weekend, I wore a mask on a bike ride, and I wore a mask on a long walk. And, you know, I didn't want to do it, and I didn't necessarily like it, but you get used to it, and it's important to role model that behavior as often as we can, and I think it's going to become ubiquitous, hopefully, over the next several weeks.
Are you using a homemade mask or some other type of mask?
Generally speaking, just a homemade mask, and then, you know, not the specially designed N95 masks, but just sort of the general mask that you see. If you think of pictures of people walking around, it looks kind of like a medical mask, but it's not an N95 mask that are reserved for first responders.
Okay, so we did have this high-profile violation of the stay-at-home order in the Over the Rhine area, and that did lead to someone's arrest. There was video of this that was all over the internet. First, let me just get your reaction again to that, and then we'll talk a little bit about the impact to buses that the reaction might have.
Well, obviously, and this got a lot of coverage on social media and in the media in general, we had a high-profile clear violation of the stay-at-home order of a social gathering over the Rhine, which in addition to breaking the stay-at-home order and putting people's health at risk, was also jeopardizing private property as people were standing on cars and things of that nature. And it's really not fair to people living around there. It's not fair to individuals who are going to be in close contact at much higher risk as a result to contract the virus and then go home to their families, and maybe even if they're young and are less likely to suffer severely, to transmit it to their elderly and uncles and aunts and grandparents and parents back at home. And, you know, that is not going to help us flatten the curve. It's going to spike the curve and could really overrun our healthcare system and put a lot of people, including healthcare workers, unnecessarily at risk.
And so there's been some discussion about the way some of the folks who gathered in violation of the stay-at-home order made their way to this street party that might change the way that Metro collects its fares. It looks like that might be reinstated. And Mayor John Cranley, we're going to talk about that next. We've got to take a quick 90-second break, and then we'll continue. We are talking with Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley live on Cincinnati Edition here on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now live with Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley. Mayor, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And so Metro had eliminated its fares as part of an effort to lessen the interaction that passengers have with drivers, to keep those drivers safe and to help spread the idea of social distancing so as not to spread COVID-19. But it looks like Metro is set to reinstate its fares because there's a suggestion that some of these free rides on the buses are encouraging illegal gatherings. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that clearly happened over the weekend, and it's obviously sort of a common sense conclusion. You know, you have lots of people, and especially young people, and I don't just mean teenagers, I also mean young adults, who have a lot of time on their hands, and clearly some of the people who gathered illegally downtown used the bus, the free bus, to do so. And, you know, I think as the weather gets warmer, it's going to become a greater and greater temptation to use the buses just to kind of, out of boredom, to head downtown and gather. And that's going to put all of us at risk. I would also say that, you know, we want to keep the buses going as long as we can, you know, before it becomes too much of a burden for the public health system. And we know that there are people who have essential jobs who depend on the bus to get to and from their job and their home. And so it's also putting them at risk at certain times if there are people just sort of joyriding the buses at that time. And so we think it's most importantly critical to keep the bus system continuing as long as we can to help people get to and from the essential jobs that they need to get to and from. And I think it was a good intention to try to make the buses free, but it has unintended consequences. Now, as you point out, there still remains a risk to the bus driver of increased interaction because of reinstating the fares. But they are rushing to put plexiglass in place, and the city is providing, if they don't have enough, gloves and masks for the short term until the plexiglass is installed. But it looks as though that the vast majority, if not all, of the buses will have the plexiglass before the free buses end later this week.
And according to WCPO, it looks like Metro will resume collecting fares by Friday. We got some comments on social media about this issue. One from Amy that says the parade of expletives that acted like buffoons ruined it for people. This is what happens when people don't parent their children and let them do whatever. Comment from Amy says this is why we can't have nice things. One comment from Krista raises a question that perhaps you could help answer, Mayor. She says, why don't they just not charge during business hours Monday through Friday? It would at least still help those who need to get around. Was that a consideration at all?
I think there are practical issues with that in terms of administration, which would also increase the interaction between the bus driver and the rider. But look, the fact is, it's not ideal. But at the same time, you know, increasingly there are fewer and fewer people that have a job and have an essential job, and so those who do are still getting paid when so many people are not getting paid. And so, you know, I don't think it's unreasonable for them to pay the bus fare, which they were probably paying before the crisis. And those who have sadly been furloughed or laid off, you know, candidly should be staying home and not riding the bus anyway.
Let's talk a little bit more with Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley about other issues facing the city amid this COVID-19 global pandemic. How do you see the city and its relationship to what it's often called a surge, and there are different timelines for different parts of the country as this comes along? What are you hearing in an official government capacity about where the city stands in that respect?
Well, it looks as though Cincinnati and Ohio in general will surge over the next 2 to 3 weeks. And I think because Ohio was at the front end of a lot of the physical distancing, we did do a good job, relatively speaking, of flattening our curve as best we could. And we are, you know, in the process of working with the National Guard to convert the convention center into a makeshift hospital for excess beds. If they become necessary, which of course we hope they won't become necessary, but we have to be prepared in case they are.
And so there was some creation of potential extra healthcare capacity through the Duke Energy Center. How much of that do you anticipate we're needing at this point? Do we still have the mayor?
We don't know.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We don't know yet. You know, Rick Lofgren, who's kind of leading and has been elected by the hospital, he's the CEO of UC Health. And he has been elected by the other hospitals, even some of his competitors, to become kind of the local voice for the hospital community in a coordinated response. And he would put the chances of us using those beds at about 50-50. There's a 50% chance we will never need them, and there's a 50% chance that we will need some of them. And so we just don't know yet.
And if it is used, what type of cases would we likely see at the Duke Energy Center?
Well, that is a work in progress and not totally decided. However, it's clear that in all cases, whether it's coronavirus or some other illness, that the best care for severe cases of any illness are at the existing hospitals and not at a makeshift hospital. So it's unclear whether we will get any coronavirus cases there, but I think it's safe to say that whoever is at the convention center will have less severe illnesses than the people that are still in the hospitals.
How is this paid for as well? I know we're facing a lot of financial challenges at the city level and all levels of government likely after this, but how is that funded?
It is our belief and expectation and hope that it will be paid for by FEMA and the National Guard, and that seems to be the way it's set up. Because of the, you know, I lose sleep worrying that we won't be ready in time, we have offered, if necessary, to advance some funds for that purpose if it would speed things up, with the hope and the expectation of being reimbursed later, meaning, you know, if there's a bureaucracy issue of getting this thing transformed and they need to buy sheets or something, you know, and we can do it quicker without going through a federal bureaucracy. You know, we have authorized, city council has authorized, and the city manager and I have directly made it clear to the National Guard that they can use our buying power in the short term, but obviously we expect to be reimbursed if that becomes necessary.
What's the status of testing in the city? Have you seen an increase in that, or is it still at a concerning level for you?
No, it's a huge problem. And we talk about this with the governor literally every day, including today, and he agrees. And it's hard to see how we go back to work and get the all clear sign until we have a much more, dramatically much more ability to test. I do think there's some hope on this serology, they call it, or antibody test that could become a quick test that once we get past the peak, could be a really effective tool in giving individuals the all clear sign to go back to work. But big picture, we need a lot more testing, and we've really got to copy some of the best practices out of Taiwan and Singapore and South Korea and Japan that allow these sad, inevitable pandemics to occur without totally destroying the economy, by having a mass test, quarantining of anyone who is sick, a fever, and other tests that allow some functionality of the economy until the worst of the pandemic passes.
So what type of request are municipal leaders making to their federal counterparts to up this testing capability?
Well, we, both the city and the state, are telling Congress and the president that we need dramatic infrastructure improvements on testing immediately, not just for the crisis that we're in the middle of, but in order to go back to work. And God forbid if this thing comes back in the second phase. And so in all circumstances, we need an infrastructure of testing that we did not have at the beginning of this crisis, and we need to have, both to get out of this crisis, but also in case this pandemic comes back.
Just before we went on the air, Senator Mitch McConnell sent out a statement, and he says that basically as soon as this week, maybe on Thursday, there could be another vote on more funding similar to the original CARES Act. He says, quote, in just a few days, this program has become overwhelmingly popular. Thanks to the hard work of small businesses and lenders, billions of dollars have already landed and tens of billions more are already in the pipeline. He says jobs are literally being saved as we speak, but it is quickly becoming clear that Congress will need to provide more funding on this crucial this crucial program may run dry. That cannot happen. McConnell goes on to say nearly 10 million Americans filed for unemployment in just the last 2 weeks. This is already a record shattering tragedy and every day counts. Mayor Cranley, what would you hope would be included in any type of second effort to push funding out to the communities and individuals from the federal government?
Well, I agree that there has been there were some really life-saving measures in the bill, including allowing in limited cases the 1099 employees who need some ability to survive to get some unemployment. The $600 increase weekly is a godsend for millions and millions of workers across the country. Now, it doesn't negate the emotional impact that you saw in my press conference and in experiences all across this country where you can tell people, hey, look, you need to sit on the sidelines right now because, A, you know, we need to keep people at home in order to reduce the spread, but in the meantime, we're going to pay you a decent amount of money, although it's decent if you make $60,000 or less. Above that, you're starting to take major pay cuts. But it doesn't really reduce the emotional impact of that, which is very hurtful to people's dignity and emotions. And I don't want to minimize that. But it's also the case that it's a financial necessity for businesses, for nonprofits, for governments. And I'm glad the federal government is stepping up in the way that they have. That effort may need to be continued and extended if the crisis goes longer than we hope. In addition to that, as you point out, they may run out of money for small businesses, in which case they're going to need to appropriate more. They may run out of money for $600 a week for individuals on unemployment, and they may need to appropriate more money for that. But it's also the case, and we literally talked to Senator Rob Portman today, and Senator Sherrod Brown last week on the need for direct assistance to local governments at all levels, township, city, county, across the state of Ohio. The Brookings Institution published a report last week that said that of all the cities in the whole country, Columbus and Cincinnati are number one and number two for being at risk in massive budget shortfalls because of the unique history of Ohio relying on the income tax for both the state and local governments. And in fact, Ohio cities were four of the top five in the entire country at greatest risk. And so our message, Democratic Republican message to Portman and Brown and to our local congressional delegation is fight for us, fight for Ohio. And just like Chuck Schumer fought for New York's money, fight for us. And this isn't ideological. This is just doing the most basic representation of your constituents so that we can continue to provide police, fire, healthcare services around the state at all levels of government.
And Mayor Cranley, we know you're incredibly busy right now. We do appreciate all the time you gave us. Before we let you go, what's your message to the people of Cincinnati as this pandemic continues?
My message is that we will get through this together. This is the worst of it. We're in the middle and the beginning of the surge. Staying at home is more important than ever. Wearing a mask is more important than ever. Keep lobbying Congress to continue to provide the financial assistance we need to get through this. And keep lobbying Congress and the president to make sure we have the testing infrastructure so that we can get back to work as soon as we can.
Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley. Mayor, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.